Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. We're devoting most of our program this morning to the Trump travel ban and reactions to it. And we continue to invite your stories, your questions, and your opinions from any point of view. Listeners, what's at stake for you? Anyone personally affected, with family members in limbo, or maybe you yourself? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And anyone else, too? Is this consistent or inconsistent with American values as you understand them? Is this necessary? Do you feel for your personal safety or that of anyone else? What else would you like to say or ask? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. My next guest on this issue and more, from a European perspective, is the former Prime Minister of Belgium, Guy Verhofstadt. He's been tweeting against the travel ban. He was the Belgian Prime Minister from 1999 to 2008. Ever since, he's been serving in the European Parliament as president of the group known as the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats. And he has a new book called Europe's Last Chance, Why the European States Must Form a More Perfect Union. Mr. Prime Minister, thank you so much for joining us. Hello from New York.
Hello. Good morning.
First, your own reaction to the travel ban, and I see many European heads of state and other officials are commenting against it. So also give us the big picture of reaction in Europe as you see it, if you
would. Well, for once, I should say there is a unity of view in Europe. That never happens on other issues, but I have all the reactions of all the heads of states and heads of government are very negative. It goes against our European values in saying, yeah, okay, when you're a Muslim and you're coming from these seven countries, you cannot enter in the U.S. anymore, even when you are somebody who was fleeing war, terror, violence, and that's completely against the international agreements that we have built up since the Second World War.
One reaction that surprised me was the one from British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, who, of course, was a big Brexit leader. He described the ban as divisive and wrong. Why would that be a consistent position for Boris Johnson to take after helping to spearhead the Brexit vote?
Yeah, but I think on values and on principles, you cannot start a whole debate on it and saying, yeah, because of political reasons, we will not criticize the American president. That is not happening because it's so far-reaching. It's not about one or other policy on trade or on climate change or on whatsoever topic. This is about do you help people who are in difficulties, and do you allow them to come to your country and to protect them? No, I thought that since World War II, after every atrocities we have lived through, we have at least understand one thing, that is that people who are going away from war, from terror, that we should help them. That's a basic principle. And so what Trump is doing for the moment is quite astonishing and will never be accepted, I think, by most of the citizens in Europe.
But Brexit, too, was targeted at reducing the flow of people into Britain from elsewhere in Europe, and that would include refugees who would come to elsewhere in Europe as well as others, right?
No, that's not about refugees. The migration argument that was used in the Brexit referendum was merely was not about refugees. Was about labor mobility inside the European Union. For example, Polish citizens going to work as a plumber in the construction sites in London. That was the main thing. In my opinion, also absolutely not justified, because labor mobility in Europe is only 1%, is 10 times lower than labor mobility in the United States of America. But nevertheless, it was a quite different argument. So I don't think maybe only Mr. Farage of the UKIP party have used that argument of terrorists coming in Britain, but never did the other Brexiteers.
I understand the distinction you're making. I have to ask you, as former Prime Minister of Belgium, in a certain sense, your country is a leading reason for this ban. The terrorist attack in Brussels last year seemed to be a lesson for many in the West to make it harder for people from Syria and elsewhere where there are strong ISIS or Al-Qaeda presences to be more wary of their admissions policies. I wonder how you see the Brussels attack in this regard.
Well, if you took all terrorist attacks in Europe since 2004, first 2004 in Madrid, then 2005 in London, then later on in Paris, in Brussels, in Berlin, in most cases you see that there are people already a long time living there who are responsible for these terrorist attacks. And the main problem that we see is that there is not enough exchange of information between the national intelligence and investigations authorities. And that's one of the reasons why I, in my book, for example, I'm saying the only way to tackle real terrorism on the European level and on a European scale is to develop European investigation and intelligence capacities and capabilities, a little bit like the FBI. The FBI was also created in the U.S. after the murder of McKinley in 1901, because the states in the U.S. Thought at that time that it was impossible to fight against this terrorist threat without doing it together on a federal level. And the same thing we have to do on the European level. Every time we see in every terrorist attack that some national intelligence or investigation services had some knowledge about the perpetrators, but this was not shared with the country where the crime finally went down.
But the U.S., or at least the Trump administration, is looking at ISIS's stated intent, I think it's fair to say, to pollute the refugee flow with some plants who are going to come into Europe and the United States to create havoc, to stage terrorist attacks. And I think there's a widespread belief that happened in the case of Brussels. So how, without instituting this kind of ban from selected countries where ISIS has a strong presence, can your country, can all the countries of Europe, can the United States be sure that the people who are coming in aren't infiltrators?
The best way to tackle this problem is, first of all, to better share your intelligence, to fight against these radicalization of Islam together. And the best way to tackle this problem, let's be honest, is to fight against the Islamic States and to anti-Islamic States in Syria and in Iraq. We all know that the Islamic State didn't exist before the entrance of the West in Iraq. I was always against the war in Iraq. I think it was a big mistake to do so. Secondly, I think it was also a big mistake not to do anything against the Assad regime at the moment that the Assad regime used their chemical weapons. So the main cause of the Islamic State has been a number of failures of our external policies in Iraq and in Syria, entering in Iraq when it was not necessary and not entering in Syria when it was necessary. So we created, in fact, a vacuum in Iraq and in Syria, and that vacuum was absorbed by the Islamic State. So the best way to get rid of the Islamic State is to defeat the Islamic State.
And listeners, we can take your phone calls in addition to specifically on the travel ban from anyone who's European who's listening right now or with ties to Europe on the theme of Guy Verhofstadt's book. And if you don't know him, he's former prime minister for 9 years of Belgium from 1999 to 2008. and he's a leader in the EU Parliament now, and his new book is called Europe's Last Chance, Why the European States Must Form a More Perfect Union. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Tammy in Livingston, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tammy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I feel exceedingly torn on this issue. I consider myself independent. I did not vote for Trump. I sat last night in tears watching the news. I have a husband who is Iranian, and I have been to Iran, and I have my relatives, my in-laws in Iran, and Iranian relatives in Germany. On the other hand, I understand the desire to increase safety, and I wanted to point out that these particular seven countries were the exact same seven countries that Obama instituted travel restrictions on in 2015. I remember our family desperately going through these restrictions and what would it mean for them traveling as Iranians. So it's not the first time that these countries have seen restrictions placed on them. And as much as I dislike Trump, my hope is that when he said during the campaign there's going to be a ban on Muslims, that he was just speaking coarsely and not understanding the nuance. And what he really meant was we're going to have a temporary ban on people who are coming in from countries where there is a known or strong Al-Qaeda or ISIS presence. Clearly, Indonesia is not on this travel restriction list. Jordan is not on the travel restriction list. So I think there was somewhat of an effort. I don't think this list was thought up out of thin air. Two other points, if I can just make them. Mm-hmm. I had the same issue when Obama instituted the restrictions. If we're thinking about safety and we're concerned about people coming in with a desire to hurt the U.S., Saudi Arabia and Pakistan should probably be on the list. And finally, the way that this was executed was horrendous. People who were traveling abroad and had return tickets couldn't return to their families. People who already had successful interviews and travel dates, there was no reason, even if this was an appropriate temporary ban, even if it was, to initiate it suddenly like that and leave people in the lurch who had plans and lives on hold and in the movement. But again, I feel exceedingly torn with one foot on both sides of
this
issue.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And certainly everybody agrees that the rollout was mishandled. I think a lot of Republicans are falling back on that as the only critique that they're stating because they can look critical of it but not take a position on some of the broader questions. Let me ask you, since your husband is Iranian, if you think Iran belongs on that list, it's not an ISIS-infiltrated country. They would be, I guess the suspicion would be that people representing the Iranian regime wanting to stage attacks in the United States would be coming in.
I honestly think, and I agree with your previous guest, that Iran is on the list just because, in general, Trump doesn't like Iran, and he wants to provoke them. Iran is in a completely different category, I think, from those other countries. You know, it is a much larger, much more powerful, much more educated country. The people from Iran who are here are educated. They're doctors and lawyers and dentists. And you know, it's a totally different situation, and I think they're there just to provoke the country and continue some animosity.
Tammy, thank you very much for your call. Wesley in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC. Hi, Wesley.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I believe I have a strong point, and I'm talking with the language that will be understood pretty much for most of Europeans who today came to this country. I support.
And you're from Poland originally, right?
Yes. Yes. And I support President Trump's decision. It is like, imagine that you have your own house and you decided to open the door and you entered some guys to your house. Now, question is, should they blame the door for being closed? And what would you do if you decide that you don't want those people any longer and they demand the right to be there? The thing is that I immigrated by myself to this country, and it was my own decision. I cannot blame United States of America of setting the rules. This is somebody's house, and somebody decides what rules are there. Now, when he came in here as a travel guy, or he decided to enter to the school in here, and now the rules change. This is for the best of the owners of the house. This is not the best for the people who came outside.
I understand. But, Wesley, what if the shoe was on the other foot and there were a few people coming from Poland at the time that you were coming who were interested in staging terrorist attacks, and the position of the United States was no more people from Poland? Wesley and Greenpoint, we're not going to vet you as an individual and see if you've got no terrorist risks in your background. We're just going to ban everybody from Poland. Would that have been okay with you?
Yes, that would be okay, because those are the rules set by the owners of the house. You didn't answer my question. How many guys would you allow to enter to your own house? And what would you do if they claimed the right to live in your own house?
You're talking about numbers of immigrants in general?
No, I'm talking about your own private house. You decided to let people in, and now you decided that you cannot afford, or for whatever reason, you feel discomfort
right.
of them being there. But they demand the right to be in your own house.
So to our guest from the EU, his point about Brexit before, Brexit was largely aimed at stopping Polish immigrants like yourself from coming to the UK where they would be able to work because there were too many Poles coming in the view of too many Brits, taking jobs that Londoners, for example, might want to take as plumbers or on construction sites. So do you support Brexit?
I believe you got a very good point. See, first, British have to defend their own well-being. And if they think that they want to let number of immigrants from Poland or number of people from Poland, because they don't have to be immigrants to
right.
work there,
correct.
To do not work there because they're losing the jobs and they created
yes.
a chaos in their own country, they should have a right
they
to
should
ban
have
it.
The right. So, Wesley, thank you very much. At least you're consistent. Prime Minister...
Yeah, I think it's a mistake to say that these Polish plumbers coming to Britain have weakened Britain. It's the opposite what is true. These people have made London and Britain wealthier. And it is not so that when people from inside Europe are working in another country, they are weakening that country. No, they are making it wealthier. And they are not picking the jobs of somebody else. They are participating to the economy, and in the whole economy is growing. And so also British people are becoming wealthier because of this. So this is the idea of some people is, yeah, when somebody from another country is coming to work here, they pick a job of somebody else. That's not true. What they are doing is that they're adding wealth to that country, and that wealth is then again divided, distributed in the society. And secondly, if you allow me, there is a scrutiny of people coming into the U.S. That's the visa regime. It's with visa that you are looking if this particular person coming from whatever country outside the U.S. Is a security threat or not. What here is happening is to tackle people with a certain religion, saying, oh, it are Muslims coming from seven countries and they cannot come in. Even people were looking for safety, for protection against violence and against terror. And my last remark is, so I don't understand at all why it are these seven countries and not other countries. If Mr. Trump want to tackle a terrorist threat, maybe he can take Saudi Arabia, maybe he can take, for example, Lebanon, maybe he can take Egypt as the countries to tackle, because all the terrorists coming into the U.S. the last year came from these three countries.
Yes.
Nobody came from Iran. Nobody came from... So another question. Why tackle Iran and why not tackling Lebanon? One of the most active, not now, but in the past, terrorist groups was the Hezbollah.
Why do you think?
Why I think, I don't know, I saw some indication on television today, on American television, saying, oh, baby maybe has interest in these countries, and he doesn't tackle these countries. And he has no interest in the other countries. So it's purely, apparently, he tackles a number of countries, apparently without any good justification, because Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Lebanon are more source, I think, of yes. terrorist attacks for the moment in the U.S. than whatever of the seven countries he has indicated.
So I'm guessing that they see other geopolitical complications and advantages to not alienating the Saudi government, the Egyptian government, the Lebanese government.
Okay, I agree with you, but then don't say to the public opinion in the United States of America that this measure is to protect against terrorists, because apparently the countries where terrorists came from, they can continue to come in the U.S. So what is that for an argument?
My guest is the former Prime Minister of Belgium from 1999 to 2008, Guy Verhofstadt, who has since served in the European Parliament as President of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe since 2009. He's the author of a new book called Europe's Last Chance, Why the European States Must Form a More Perfect Union. And it looks to me in the book that you want to see, despite the fraying of the EU that seems to be taking place to some degree, you want to see an even more integrated Europe, like a U.S.-style federal government. Is that correct?
That's correct, but doesn't say an even more integrated, because it's not integrated for the moment, the European Union. It's still a loose confederation of member states based on the unanimity
yes.
rule. It's a little bit like your old, the start of your of America, 1776, you remember, before the Convention of Philadelphia, a loose confederation based on unanimity that doesn't work. And that is what is happening for the moment in Europe. And what I'm asking in the book, what I'm requesting in the book, is to do a jump forward in the direction of a European federation, because we are a little bit isolated. We have, on the one hand, Trump, a populist, let me say that very bluntly. We're saying openly that he is hoping for a further disintegration of the European Union. And on the other hand, we are squeezed by an autocrat, Vladimir Putin, who is openly hoping for a division, a disintegration also from the European Union. And so that is the reason why I think that we have to take our future in our own hands to go further in a more united, more effective European Union. And to do it the fastest as possible. By the way, I think that Mr. Trump makes a big mistake to bid on a disintegration of the European Union. Europe is his best ally. If America wants to be great again, he needs a strong European ally. And bidding on a disintegration of the European Union, fueling against nationalism in Europe, well, that's the worst thing. I have never seen an American president doing that.
What do you think is the path to reducing the nationalism in Europe?
The best way is to show to the citizens a clear vision of how a united Europe can overcome the challenges of today. The migration flow, the refugee crisis, the fallout still of the financial crisis. We have not dealt with it in contradiction with America. And then further, find solutions for a geopolitical weakness, a defense union. So that is the things at stake. And those who are thinking, oh no, let's come back to the nation states of the 19th century. And so what we have seen, what nationalism has done in Europe, it has created atrocities in the 20th century. It has created 20 million of deaths in Europe. So those in the U.S. were bidding on the return of nationalism in Europe. They're crazy. They want that we go back to the most awful periods of our history.
How much do you think the rise of the far right in Europe is because European nations haven't dealt directly enough with the question of immigration from Muslim-majority countries, and how many immigrants from those countries are assimilable how quickly into Europe without a major culture clash or clash of civilizations, as some have called it?
Yeah, I don't believe in the book of Samuel Huntington on the Clash of Civilizations, but it's true that we have not enough done efforts to integrate these Muslim populations in our society. That said, nationalism and populism exist already before that problem. Nationalism and populism is typical for Europe. We invented nationalism in Europe. So to better deal with this problem of integration of these communities is certainly a task also for the European Union in the future.
And you mentioned the economic crisis in Greece and some other countries. Some argue that the different nations just don't have enough unity of economic discipline or wealth and poverty balance and other things to make, you know, very European, to make every European economically responsible for every other European and every other country. Can you really smooth out that difference and get popular support for a national Europe?
For a European approach of the crisis and of the economic problems, I think that there is support for. So if we ask, for example, in a survey, do you want more Europe to tackle the unemployment or to tackle the financial crisis in Europe, everybody is saying yes. But people are very critical towards the way the European Union is dealing with the problem now. And is not capable to launch such a strategy. You have to know, we have a European Union, but it's not a real union. It's still a confederation of nation states. Every decision has to be taken by unanimity, and that is not happening. So what is typical for Europe is that we always act too little, too late. That's the main problem in Europe. We don't have the institutions for the moment, the federal institutions, to directly involve and tackle a crisis. I take the comparison between the way the Americans tackled the financial crisis and we have tackled the financial crisis. In America, in 9 months, you cleaned up the banks. That was TARP, $400 billion. You launched an investment program, $900 billion. And you did quantitative easing with the Federal Reserve, $1.2 trillion. Well, in Europe, all this has not been done. We are still discussing what could be the way out of this crisis. Is it Ferguson or is it Krugman? Is it austerity or is it growth? We still not have a full banking union. And all this because we lack a federal government who is taking decisions. It's still 28 people coming together, heads of states and government, and only they are capable to decide if they act by unanimity. Well, unanimity, you know it better in your history, doesn't work.
Guy Verhofstadt, former Prime Minister of Belgium, now the author of Europe's Last Chance, Why the European States Must Form a More Perfect Union. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we're going to offer advice to anybody who thinks you or anyone you may know may be affected by the travel ban. We will have immigration advisor Alan Wernick join us in just a minute. And if you or anyone you know might be personally affected by the travel ban, especially if you're confused about what you can do or what they can do, we're going to give you very specific advice, and we invite your calls for that advice. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Alan Wernick from CUNY's Citizenship Project will come on in a minute and answer your questions. Stay with us.